for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Content. Listener discretion is advised. 3, 2, 1, go! Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew. Loveline, coast to coast.
Hey, everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew over there. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Dr. Drew, board-certified physician, addiction medicine specialist. Kevin Nealon is our guest tonight.
I'm just board-certified.
Kevin is funnier than most people know.
Even after they've seen me.
Even after they've seen us act countless times. Still, they must be reminded how funny he is.
That's right.
Now, Kevin, I was saying this about him,
Was it just last night?
Yes, Kevin is very low-key with his comedy.
Dry.
Very dry, but he's very smart, and he's very funny, and I think... you know, there's some people, for instance, there's some chicks that are always in the top 10 of the Maxim magazine, 100 best looking, and they're not that hot.
Yeah.
And some people are a little, they get counted for a little better looking,
yeah,
or a little funnier, or a little whatever. You're getting screwed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've put a call in a Maxim about that.
Yeah, please.
Because I think they're responsible.
Kevin is, his new show is the Conspiracy Zone, which I did. And I enjoyed. And Drew, did you do that show? Did we talk about this?
No.
Well, we did not ask Drew to do it.
Oh,
see,
yeah,
see.
There was some problems there.
I am
true.
I'm sorry. Maybe I'm sorry.
Kevin hates me.
That was awkward. I'm sorry.
No. I think they did ask him.
Really? They did?
Well, I don't know. I don't get involved in that stuff.
Yeah. The guy who used to do PI,
Scott Carter.
Scott Carter left PI to go produce for Kevin.
He knew how funny I was.
Right.
He'd heard that Kevin was funny and then was sorely disappointed after he became his producer. But he, I'm surprised because he's a fan of yours.
Yeah.
And, you know, anyway.
Well, we've only done 2 episodes.
Right. And I did both of them.
So, right. Okay.
Now, I was actually proud to say that I did the first episode that aired on TNN, and it's on. Is it on different times, different places?
Well, you know, you get into that central, eastern, bicoastal stuff, and it probably is a different time. But mostly, it's 9 o'clock on Sunday nights on the new TNN, and then it's rerun on Friday nights at 7:30 and 12.
I'm gonna write that down and
plug that into your TiVo, Adam.
And yes, I shall
replace all those mashes it's recording.
And, yeah, for no good reason, because I've never seen MASH and I never recorded MASH. But Drew, don't get me going on that. Now, I heard that you guys got picked up. Did you not?
Well, you know, we got some more shows ordered, so we just completed another 11 shows, so that makes 26 total. 26,000.
Mm.
Really? No, we got 26 done, and then they'll show those over the summer, and then we'll see if we get more. Just kind of, you know, taking it as it comes.
TV.
Yeah, and are you still doing a lot of stand-up?
I'm doing a lot of stand-up, a lot of corporate stuff, and I'm actually going to be at a club. I haven't done a club in a long time, but I always heard that club in Arizona, in Tempe, Arizona, was great. There was an improv out there, and I've been working on my act lately, so I'm going to go out there for a few days and just kind of write and
come. Well, do you want to give it a plug now?
Yeah, well, Tempe, Arizona, May 23rd through the 26th.
All right, I'm going to write that down, too. And how about the corporate stuff? That works okay, right?
Corporate stuff is good. It's very lucrative. You fly in, you don't have to do any publicity, no promos. You don't have to get up at 6 in the morning to do radio stuff or TV. And you know, you do your thing, and then you're out of there that next morning.
I think it's a world of showbiz that the common man does not know about.
The parallel universe of the corporate.
Yeah, the corporate
appearance.
Yeah, I mean, they know, I think most people are familiar with the concept of, like, doing colleges, and we've done a lot of colleges.
Had you ever heard of that before we started doing that? I'd never heard of that.
I think if you're in college or passed through college when other acts and things were passing through, then you've probably heard of it. That eliminates my friends, by the way.
And I think people are of the sense that politicians go and speak to corporate organizations.
Right, but what they don't realize is that John Stewart can make himself $50,000 for showing up at some Beatrice convention.
That's right. And also, you know, it's not just comedians. It's bands, too. It's bands like the Rolling Stones.
Oh, my God.
They did a gig in Hawaii, I heard, last year. I don't forget who it was for IBM or somebody. But they had a stipulation in their contract that they needed to pull 500 people off the street that weren't associated with the corporation so that they could get into the, you know,
oh, really?
Pretty stiff. So they wanted people in the front, 500 normal people, regular people, just to get into it and, you know, really rock.
It's a little covert world that the corporations don't seem to want to advertise because maybe they don't want their shareholders and stockholders knowing that they gave $1 million to the Rolling Stones, and the Rolling Stones don't necessarily want to know people know that they're dancing for the man. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of the equivalent of one of these European commercials that, you know, Costner does some commercial in Japan for $5 million and keeps it nice and quiet. But
by the way, the Rolling Stones only got 50,000.
Really?
Yeah, they got John.
It's not that
John
much.
Money. No, that's not. But the other interesting thing about it is a lot of times they're bringing you in unannounced, so they want you to kind of hide out from the rest of the corporation that night, you know, the night you get there. And so you like you're going through the kitchen, you know, you're staying in your room, you're wearing big floppy hats and sunglasses.
And are you going out there just doing stand up, or are you basically tailoring it toward the corporation you're working for?
You do tailor it a little bit. You customize, and that's part of your contract. Depends. Some people go in, you know, like Leno goes out a lot after, you know, his show, and he'll do a little corporate jet to someplace and do, you know, his 45 minutes or whatever, just stand up.
Jesus
but
Christ.
But someone like me, you know, they get me to do, like, stuff from Saturday Night Live. You know, I'm being more of a monkey. You know, I got to do, like, the weekend
sure.
update and customize some jokes for them. And,
you got to dance.
You know, and do some subliminal, you know.
it's a weird venue, and I'm not sure how necessary. I think more people would be happy with karaoke.
Right.
I would be distracted if Leno was doing 45 minutes into some gig where I was trying to eat and get loaded.
Did you hear Clinton did like a few minutes of stand-up the other night at a sort of a corporate gig?
No, I didn't know that.
He did like 10 minutes of stand-up.
Oh, he's only got like 7.
But he did slides. And I heard on the radio, it was like...
Well, he's got a clean 7.
Yeah.
But he worked blue and he stretched it out to 10.
It was bad. I couldn't believe this.
Well, do you think he should carry on some decorum because he's an ex-president?
And a bad comedian.
Oh, you know what he does? He ends with the saxophone, and that's huge. You know, that's what he gets off on.
It's really funny that when a guy who is a president can do anything else at all other than be president, so it's really exciting to the public. All right, so Conspiracy Zone, everybody, Sunday nights, or Sunday and Friday nights.
Friday's the rerun.
Rerun, 7:30 and 9 o'clock on Sunday nights. All right,
new TNN.
Let's talk to Eric, who's 18. Eric?
Eric? There we are, Eric?
Yeah.
Hey.
All right. I have two friends, and they live together, and they're engaged, and they're both virgins, and they say they're saving themselves for each other. And last Friday, the girl came over, and we were at my house, and we were watching movies, and I accidentally slept with her, I guess.
Accidentally?
Huh. Yeah. All right.
Accidentally.
Well, it happens.
Yeah.
So now what?
And so I want to know, it's kind of an ethical dilemma, if I should tell him or not.
Well, why would you want to tell him?
I wouldn't want their marriage to be tainted by that.
It would be tainted if you tell them.
First, you should tell her that you slept with her.
She may not know.
No, she knows.
Are they both 18?
Well, actually, he's 19.
Oh, well, that makes all the difference then.
Well, now you have to. Yeah. No, hey, Eric?
This is a good case in point for why people shouldn't be getting married at 18.
But don't say anything.
Secondly, there's an interesting sort of, I don't even call it a theory, but some people think they've observed this kind of behavior in women not uncommonly, where they sow to go have a last fling just before they get married. And one of the theories is that they're trying to collect all that alpha male genetic material before they settle down with the guy that's going to father the children.
Right, but does that theory still count when she drank 11 Mike's Hard Lemonades and he entered her while she was passed out?
Yeah, but that doesn't count if she's passed out.
I see.
He didn't pursue this. She came over and sort of did her thing.
Let me get this straight. So they will sleep, they'll do a last fling and sleep with a guy to get that
alpha male genetics. They settle down with a parenting type guy. But
yeah,
they want the gene from the alpha male.
Yeah.
To make the children.
Let me tell you.
Oh,
see what I'm saying?
Kevin will actually get the gene.
We're both on the losing end of that proposition. Do you understand?
I guess so.
We're not the last fling guy.
Right, right.
We actually neither.
Why do you smell like fruit, guy? You smell like fruit and anchovies. Where have you been? Hey, Eric.
Yeah.
You sound very remorseful.
You just sound anxious. You sound kind of nervous.
No, he sounds like an idiot is what he sounds like. I don't even know if I believe you, but if this is true.
Keep to yourself.
That's right. Nothing good ever came from
the
truth.
If you want to do anything, convince them not to get married at 18. Tell them to wait 10 years.
Don't even. He sounded sort of proud of himself, which is...
He just sounded sort of like...
No, he...
Freaked out about it.
No, he...
Well, what happens if he doesn't tell him, but she ends up telling him?
That's what she'll do
when he bangs one of her friends.
That's right. Then she'll
down the road.
Yeah, women right. don't tell unless they need the ammunition.
They hold it.
Yeah, they hang on to it.
Sean?
Yes.
You're 24?
Yes, I am.
What's up?
Me and my wife now, we just recently got married March 2nd, and we've been married about a month and almost 2 weeks. And since the day we got married, we've run into a lot of financial difficulties.
The day you got married?
Well, it was probably about a week and a half, 2 weeks after.
But what does that mean? What happened?
That's when the bills came in for the wedding.
Yeah.
Right.
It wasn't only that. I guess there was a lot of bills that she had owed I didn't know about.
Mm.
A lot of bills. I mean, I had bills of my own that I...
All right. True. Don't talk to the callers.
I understand. Understood.
What's the question, buddy?
The question I have is ever since we've come into this real deep financial problem, there's been a lot of fighting, arguing. Basically, we're not getting along as well as we did in the beginning.
Hold on a second. I always know we're in trouble at the call when they do the math. Yeah, we got married March 2nd. That was approximately 1 month.
2 weeks.
Sorry, 1 month, 13 days from right now. Now, she had, that's trouble. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Drew? You're angry already?
Yeah.
Who, me or the caller?
You both.
Okay. Sean.
Yeah?
Pick it up and spit it out, buddy. Here we go.
All right, let me pick it up.
Well, his connection's bad,
well,
so
here's
it
the deal.
Exacerbates
here's the deal.
Things.
Money and sex, those are the two things that people fight about. But if you're having sort of relationship-threatening level of conflict 2 weeks into a marriage, you're going to have long-term problems. And the fact that she was hiding some of this stuff from you, it suggests that there's more here than really this financial issue really suggests.
Well,
certainly people fight about money, but the point is you guys need some couples counseling in the worst way. You better
note it all off as we just found out today that the place we're living at, we'd have to be out.
Look, financial problems are stressful. Financial problems add to acrimony in a relationship, to conflict. But 2 weeks into a wedding and our surrounding issues that she had hidden from you, time for some couples work here.
How are they going to afford that? Trip?
That's right. That's going to be more money.
Well, county. See if there's any county facilities or county mental health services. Somewhere someone can sit down with you and kind of go over things a little bit.
Do you even get a human being?
We do. Yeah, sometimes robot. Dog, actually.
But. They have couples therapy. They have couples accountants.
Not that I'm aware of.
You can sit down with a couples accountant.
Sean?
They do have couples accountants.
I don't know.
No.
Sean, how much money are you guys in the hole for?
What do you need?
No, we're kind of in the hole.
Okay. I'm going to guess 50,000.
Kevin could clean it all up with one corporate gig.
I have my checkbook out right now.
How much are you in the hole for? And please don't respond.
We're
in the hole.
Yeah. So how much? How much? Or roughly how much?
Right around probably 20,000.
$20,000. That's a lot of money.
Not insurmountable. Are you working?
Oh, yeah, I'm working full-time. I'm actually working two jobs full-time.
Why don't you, which ironically makes you less money than working one job full-time, and three is worse even than two.
Is that right?
I've never really done the math on four, but the guys who work three jobs make less money than the guys who work two jobs who make less money than the guys who work one job, and the guys who don't work full-time at all, they're just sort of self-employed, make the most.
Where does it all go?
I'm not sure how it works. But, Drew, we have found the guys who work...
Two jobs are complaining about money.
You see it. You see it all the time when they're interviewing the sports stars. Mama worked four jobs, and yep, we all lived in a coffee can, all 14 of us.
It doesn't pay to do that after a while with taxes and all that stuff. Gas money and.
How about I think that Sean ought to go to that counselor and also do one of these free debt consolidation things. You throw yourself on the mercy of someone that consolidate everything. Sometimes you play pennies on the dollar. They have things you can do now.
Yeah. Consolidator, it's a good divorce lawyer as well.
Mm,
yeah. Yeah, they really should. Guys should wear more than one hat. Ryan?
Ryan? There he is.
Hello.
All right, listen, I've had an ass full of guys who are on Quaaludes and Jack tonight. I want some perky broad. Ryan?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. Hey.
Tara.
I can't handle any more guys who've been sucking off an ether rag. Huh? I don't want to talk to anyone on a speakerphone. I don't want to talk to anyone with a bad connection. I don't want to talk to anyone who doesn't really have a question. I had sex with my neighbor's friend. And I don't want people falling asleep. I want to talk to some perky chick that was felt up at one point in her life.
Here we go.
Possibly by a family member.
Got it. Line four.
But that gives her a lot of energy today. Carmen?
Hello.
You're 23?
Yes, I am.
There you go. What's up?
Well, I'm asking a question. I experienced a form of incest, and I'm very confused as to exactly what it is. Because I was 9 years old, and my cousin at the time was also 9. And there obviously wasn't very much sex involved, but it was a sexual act. Like, we attempted to have sex together.
Well, yeah. When a child has been sexually abused by an adult, they will frequently go do this kind of stuff to other children. And the children who are subjected to that abuse are affected by it sometimes rather profoundly.
Yeah, because I've seen it, like, affecting me sexually quite a great
really?
Deal.
Really? This happened how many times?
It happened once.
Yeah. And
I was also molested when I was a child.
Well, there you go.
Well,
that's the big thing.
Are you Catholic?
No.
Oh.
Well, it could have been more than once, so you dodged your bullet there. What are you? You're not Jewish.
Yes, I am.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that Jews did this.
Name. Or...
Yeah, they do.
Carmen the Jew?
Yeah.
That's your real name?
No.
Oh, there we go.
Okay. Very confusing. All right, so who molested you?
Babysitter.
Non-Jew.
Non-Jew.
That's right. The goyim.
Make it more comfortable.
The goyim molest. Okay.
I guess $5 an hour wasn't enough. Huh?
What's it doing for you now, Carmen? What's happening?
Well, I wasn't sexually active until I was 21 because I just didn't want to deal with that. And so now, sometimes I just can't continue with the act.
You start crying, that kind of thing?
No, no crying, but it
hurts?
Overwhelms me.
Overwhelms,
no, it doesn't hurt me.
Well,
you kind of dissociate when you're in those experiences?
When I become overwhelmed, yes.
Yeah, those episodes of dissociation are how young children deal with the overwhelming powerlessness and the biological trauma of being sexually abused, and that then becomes sort of wired into your circuitry. Whenever you now experience any interpersonal stress, you kind of move towards that dissociation. And certainly if you reenact sex, pow, you go from, you know, sort of stimulated and trying to escape to dissociating.
I reenacted sex myself about 8:45 this evening. Yeah, alone. But it was a hell of a reenactment.
Do you really consider it a reenactment anymore? Isn't it the real thing?
I look at it as a reenactment of someone else's sexual experience masturbate.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, with Carmen, is it just when she's having sex with the babysitter that she gets these feelings?
Or? Yes. That's the way I read it.
True. And no. So, Carmen, you got to get some treatment on this because this is going to take some time to sort of recircuit things. You literally have to build new mechanisms in the brain because this is sort of the physiologic residual of the kind of experience.
Well, don't we want to find out how old you were or who the babysitter was? I mean, what, did it go on for years or...
No, it didn't go on for years. I remember it once, and I was really young. Like, I must have been 5 years old.
And this was a male babysitter?
Yeah.
And you guys had sex? Or you had sex with you?
No. If I was 5 years old and he had sex with me, I think that it would be more apparent.
Hold on a second. Let me talk to my peanut gallery here. I don't want to minimize what Carmen's been through, but first it's like her cousin molested her, but not really. It was one time, and he was 9, and they didn't really do it. Now she got molested by a babysitter but it was one time.
Here's what's interesting, Carmen.
Really,
I bet you we'd find, if we talked to more, that it was not so traumatic that it generalizes into all of her interpersonal experiences. It stays in the sexual realm. She gets overwhelmed when she's having sex. Right. It sort of triggers all that old stuff.
Yeah, I'm not calling her a liar or hypochondriac or overreact, but maybe there wasn't as much as
or
she
maybe
says.
Maybe one good relationship and she'd work it through.
Well, how do you rebuild your mechanisms?
You have to. It's there's theories about how it works, but it's basically about forming new kinds of attachments and re-experiencing these overwhelming feelings in the presence of another person, which activates the right frontal lobe to begin growing, quite literally.
That sounds pretty sexy to me.
Yeah, so very sexy.
Carmen, I'm becoming aroused. Carmen?
Yes.
So the babysitter felt you up, basically?
Yeah.
And did you do things to him?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's enough. Okay. And the rest of your life is going okay beside the sexual part?
Everything else is fine.
Okay. Well, there you go.
What about one solid relationship that really, with somebody really cares about you, you kind of work this stuff through?
Well, no. I've never had a relationship over 6 months.
But why don't you work on that? Maybe that's the answer here. Get someone who really genuinely cares about you, who you really trust and are willing to be vulnerable with, and, you know, let him get you through this. It's possible that you can do it just with a good, solid, connected relationship.
Do you think this is Carmen Electra?
No.
Oh, it's not. I thought it was Carmen Miranda. All right, Carmen.
All right.
Take care of yourself, all right?
I will.
All right. Thanks. Yeah. I went down. I got attacked by a police dog today.
Really?
Yeah.
For the man show?
Yeah, but, you know, the dog didn't know it was the man show.
Right.
The dog thought I was a perp. Hmm. Understand?
Did you have the leather stuff on? And
no, I was wearing Speedos.
Oh, boy.
No, I had the suit on. But the dog's vicious. I went down and tried out for the Hawthorne SWAT team today.
That's tough to get on, that team.
Hawthorne's one of the toughest in the nation. I know you were Downey SWAT for many years.
I was Downey SWAT for 3 years, North Hollywood for 5 years.
Ooh,
right. And Venice SWAT team for about 2 weeks.
But even you couldn't have cut the Hawthorne SWAT.
No, I couldn't get near the Hawthorne SWAT.
I went up in the helicopter, got attacked by the police dog.
In the helicopter?
No, the dog was
on
the ground.
Jumpers.
It waited until I got out of the helicopter for it to attack me. Fired a full automatic machine gun, which was good times. Shotguns, pistols. Got tasered. And I'm not talking about the one you send away in the back of a Popular Science, a Popular Mechanics magazine. I'm talking about the one that shoots out the barbs with the fishing wire on it that sends the current through you so you cramp yourself.
Well,
that one.
Did you drop?
Yeah, you drop. You have to drop or the guys won't stop pushing the button.
I would drop before they shot it.
Yeah.
How hard do you think it would be to get on that SWAT team?
After today, I'd say fairly difficult. I mean, unless you're, you know, I don't know if they got some kind of affirmative action thing for comedians over there. What about a guy who's been cursed with a sense of humor? Can't you put us on that team?
You know, about 2 weeks ago down in Florida, this robber had his penis bitten off by a SWAT dog.
Good. Really?
Yeah, attack dog. Yeah.
Let me tell you, the thing that's scary about the dog thing is, you get padded up. But unlike other things where you get kind of padded up, you have a creature attacking you, which is sort of, it's a little alarming. When the creature obviously doesn't know you're padded up, it's just going at you. And the other thing that's a little weird about the dog attacking you, which I wasn't aware of until I was at a full run and the dog was behind me, which is the dog does not grab at your pant leg. The dog launches itself at your back and takes you down.
Wow.
And, you know, you're instructed, you know, once you're on the ground. And, you know, it's not a science. And the guys who handle them are sort of vague in a scary way. It's like, so what should I do when I'm on the ground? Well, keep your hands tucked into your sleeves. Yeah, but what's the dog doing when I'm on the ground? Well, he should stay on to wherever he's on to, and he'll be there.
Yeah.
What if he decides to move around, though? You know, go for the face or the neck. I don't have a lot of protection. I'm wearing a Nehru jacket that's got some padding on it. But
that's why he's attacking you, for bad fashion.
That's right. There's a guy wearing a members only that was killed just weeks ago.
You know, the scary thing about attack dogs or any animal attacks you is they come in with the mouth. You know, if they're coming with their paws at you, it wouldn't be so bad. Or, if, you know, if people, when they attacked you, if they came at you with their mouth, it would be terrifying.
It
you know,
would.
Their teeth showing and just going to bite your face.
This thing, it launches itself between your shoulder blades at a full run, and it takes you down. It doesn't grab you by the pant leg and slow you down and then sort of gnaw on it
like a rope toy. Were you caught unawares? I mean, did it surprise you?
No, the guy gave me this one, too, which is, this is always the tough part. Too. It's like when the karate instructor tells you, you know, now the karate instructor or chiropractor says, you know, don't resist. You could hurt yourself. But that's all he tells you.
Right.
And you're not sure if you're going to resist or not because you're not.
Right. You've never been there before.
Yes, your reptilian mind may tell you to resist without you okaying it. But the guy was like, you run in a full sprint. You get about 20, 30 yards. Then I let the dog go. Now, here's the deal. The dog's going to get you between the shoulders. It gets you to full sprint. Probably gets you around the back, and it's going to take you down. Now, it'll take you down, and it's going to stay on you. So, you know, cover up, and then we'll do our best to get the dog off you. But it's not like the guy calls from 60 yards away, hey, Shep, you know, and the dog jumps off. No, they got to wrestle the dog off you. The dog is on you. But here's the thing I like. It's like, listen, don't look back, and when you see the dog coming, if you do see the dog coming, don't stop. I mean, don't try to resist it. Because you're going to get hurt, and the dog's going to get hurt. So the deal is don't even brace yourself. You just run. That dog will take you down.
Yeah.
Go right ahead.
You know.
And action.
Oh, man.
That was horrible.
You know how dogs react to harmonicas? You know, you start blowing this. It might be if someone's going to rob something, they might want to bring a harmonica with them. So when the attack dog got him down, you just start blowing that thing.
I get one of those
ears would.
You know, one of those tuners.
Yeah, a tuner would be worse.
Like a C flat. All right. Kevin Nealon here tonight, everybody. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Dr. Drew over there. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Kevin Nealon is our guest tonight. Kevin is from the Conspiracy Zone, which is 9 o'clock Sunday nights on the new TNN, and then Friday night, 7:30. It's a rerun in... Kevin, I always enjoyed you on a Weekend Update all those years on Saturday Night Live. What do you think of it today? I liked Norm a lot, too, but the new crew, Tina Fey and Tina Yellers, I believe two people named Tina? No, Tina Fey and what's his nose?
What's Jimmy,
the
Fallon.
Jimmy Fallon. I enjoy the news format a lot. I think the writing is fine. But I don't like the team, and I don't like them giggling.
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody comes to the Weekend Update with their own kind of, you know, style.
Yes.
And, you know, when I took over from Dennis, some people were happy, some people weren't happy. You know, they liked the way Dennis did it. And then when Norm took over from me, same thing, you know. So I think it's all about change on that show. People get used to a certain format, a certain way that people do it. And then when someone else comes along, you know, they're either happy or they're not about it.
How much of that writing would you do each week?
Well, that was the thing. The writers didn't like to write for the Weekend Update segment because it wasn't a glorifying writing job. You know, like on Monday, nobody would say by the water cooler, hey, did you hear that joke about, you know,
right,
whoever on Weekend Update? They would be talking about the characters. Hey, did you see that sketch? You know,
right.
So what they would have to do is they would put out a breakfast spread up in the writer's wing, you know, Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, it was great. It's like pancakes and eggs, trying to entice the writers to come up and write, you know, like at 11 in the morning, 10 o'clock. And then they have stacks of AP photos and all the newspapers. So I would be
Saturday morning? I mean, that day?
That day, yeah. But before that, leading up to that, and you'd only get a few writers coming up. And most of them just came up to eat and read the paper. A few of them would write and do the jokes. So the rest of it, you know, I was writing or I was having comics fax me in jokes and I'd pay him.
Oh, really?
It's a joke, yeah.
But the bulk of it would take place on a Saturday day of the show?
Generally, from the writers on the show. The rest I would get together, or we had a Weekend Update producer, Herb Sargent, who would write some. And then the last year I was doing it, I was able to hire a writer just to write for that.
And what was the normal schedule for you, let's say your last year there? Would you show up on a Monday?
Yeah, I get up on Monday and I shower.
Hold on. Showers?
Shower.
Turn the alarm off.
Shower.
Monday, turn the alarm off?
Yes, then go back to bed. No, I'd go in. Everybody would go in about 6 o'clock, and they meet the host in Lorne Michaels' office, and we'd all pitch our ideas, and a lot of them were just kind of pseudo-ideas.
That's a Monday?
Yeah, Monday evening.
Right.
Tuesday, people would start filing in the evening.
Really?
And for some reason, people like to write at night all night long, and, you know, and then kind of turn their sketches in at 6 in the morning in their socks, you know.
Really?
Yeah, and I couldn't do that long. You know, I was on the show for 9 years, and the first couple of years I started doing that. But after that, I would start writing on Monday,
right,
and then Tuesday afternoon, and try to be home by 11 or 12 that night. So then after you write all the sketches, then Wednesday they have a table read of all the sketches that were written, and,
right,
and that got longer and longer as the cast got bigger and bigger.
Right.
And then they'd pick, you know, like 10 sketches out of that table read that
right
evening. You kind of wait around and see if your sketch got picked.
Wednesday evening.
Yeah. And then Thursday, the band would come in and rehearse, and then they start blocking some of the sketches that were picked.
Mm-hmm.
Friday, the same thing. Then, you rehearse at in the evening with the costumes. That was Saturday.
Dress rehearsal.
Saturday during the day, yeah, you rehearse with your costumes, and then they have dress rehearsal at 8 o'clock. They go in about 2 sketches heavy, and then on the live show, they cut 2 sketches or so.
Oh, they would?
Yeah. They wanted to see which ones worked better during the dress.
Oh, I see. And how prepared, I mean, I guess it varied from week to week, but were there weeks when you were sort of flying by the seat of your pants? I mean, stuff wasn't finished, stuff wasn't ready.
Well,
a lot
yeah
of question marks floating around.
Well, Lorne Michaels always used to say the show is never ready to go on. It's just time to go on. You know?
Right.
And that was basically true because, you know, there'd be a lot of rewriting in between the dress show and the air show. You know, there'd be
right
writer rooms like off of the studio, and they'd be scribbling on, you know, and getting it to the PAs, and they'd be typing it up and getting it to the cue cards.
Right.
And Lorne would be shuffling the sketches to see, we're going to put this one here up front more because that was a stronger one, and this is going to go near the end.
It just seems like the pressure cooker.
It is a pressure cooker, and sometimes you'd go out there for the live show not even knowing what the changes were, you know,
right,
and you'd just be relying on the cue cards.
Wow.
You know, that's why you see a lot of the actors on that show, or the host, looking
at the cue cards.
Like they're reading
yeah
from the cue cards, because it changes so much.
Right.
You know.
Hey, interesting. I've never really got the full schedule breakdown.
Are people free to kind of go with their own stuff if something starts kicking their fancy?
That almost never happened when I was there.
Huh.
One time Chris Farley got caught on it. He was supposed to be pulled from the Weekend Update desk. He had a cable on and a harness. He was supposed to fly out of the audience.
he got caught up
on something. And he couldn't get free, so we just kind of vamped for a little bit there until he got free.
Yeah, well, I would imagine if you're doing the sketch and everything's on cue cards and stuff, it's
yeah
going to be tough to
get off
go your own
direction. Yeah, a lot of people ask. They said, you improvise a lot on that show, you know, you come up with stuff, and you really don't. You know, you're doing
it. No, I know. They make you feel like a pussy for saying no, but it's not that you can't improvise. It's that if you try to improvise in the middle of a bunch of written material with other people who
right
are on the copy,
right,
it's going to screw everything up.
Exactly.
Ron?
Yeah.
You're 29?
Yes, sir, I am.
Nealon can't improvise. Did you hear? Pass the word.
But he's funny.
I like that.
He's funny, but, you know.
He can't improvise and people don't know he's funny.
That's the two things that people don't know about Nealon.
I don't know how to tell you this. Have we met before, guys?
You look familiar.
Yeah.
Where would we have met you?
Through Michelle. Why bring her last name into it?
Ooh,
I don't know. Oh, yeah.
Who cares?
Now I know.
Do you?
No, I have no idea.
You mentioned this name to me off the air because I got on the phone with her for a second. That's someone I've never met, although we know her sister.
I don't know who her sister is
you
either.
You do.
I do?
Yeah.
All right. We can't say her name?
No.
Why?
Guys.
That's bad for the person?
Michelle Pfeiffer, he said.
Oh, Michelle Pfeiffer?
You ever met Michelle Pfeiffer?
Well, we know Dee Dee Pfeiffer.
Dee Dee, right. We know
Dee Dee. She's been on the show a couple times.
Right, we know Dee Dee.
Not as funny as Kevin Nealon. Almost.
Can improvise
not
well.
Quite. Can improvise, ironically.
Yeah, she's very good at it.
Ron?
Guys, either I'm as crazy as a loon, or I'm telling
yeah
you, I told you guys a bunch of lies so you would believe me about something bad about September 11th.
I'm going with the loon part.
Okay. If that's cool, that's...
Well, what would Michelle Pfeiffer have to do with this?
I believe, I'm telling you, I believe, and I could find out for sure. I could go through documents to find out. But
please.
There's a very expensive place or piece of property right near my house, and she used to own it.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. Michelle Pfeiffer did.
Or her family. I don't know who.
Yes.
Okay? Whose name it was, I don't know.
Don't tell me it was the World Trade Towers.
No.
No.
No, sir.
All right. You're calling from Maryland.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Okay.
It's just a local mansion, a historic.
All right. Her family owned that.
Okay.
All right.
Once upon a time, we had a conversation. She knew that I listened to the show. I told her about being molested, okay? She went on the show, and then when she did without permission, she called. She called me.
Okay, well, she's never been on this show.
Never.
Never.
Talking about Michelle Pfeiffer?
Never been on this show. We've never met her.
No. Sorry, buddy.
All right, guys, can you tell me about paranoia then?
yeah. Well, they have medication for that.
Right. Do you do speed?
No.
Cocaine?
Everything I do is cigarettes and coffee. That's it.
What do you do for a living?
I just quit my job because this stuff has been bothering me.
The Michelle Pfeiffer stuff?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that sounds like some sort of delusional preoccupation. And you ought to see someone about that. You know, it can be a lot of different things. It could even be medical problems. So you ought to go to a doctor, start out, tell them about these things you've been feeling. Because you don't sound psychotic. You know what I mean? You've got this fixed delusion in this one area.
I'll tell you what bothers me most about Michelle Pfeiffer is that her live-in lover for many years was the Indian guy from Short Circuit. Yeah. Remember that movie?
Oh, no.
Yeah. He wasn't really Indian, was he?
No. He was just a fine, fine actor who apparently could improvise. yeah.
So what is Michelle Pfeiffer saying to him?
I wouldn't even get into it. Something about September 11th.
Fisher Stevens is his name, yeah.
Because I've gotten a few calls from her myself.
Have you? About September 11th? Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. But it was September 11th, 1985.
Yeah, different 11th. Yeah. So apparently Ron knows he's a little insane in the membrane, right?
He's aware this thing is preoccupying him abnormally to the point where he had to quit his job.
So he's got to get some medication, yes?
He's got to get a diagnosis.
What's his move? Go to
a general doctor, talk about this, make sure it's not a medical problem.
Ron?
Yeah.
Go to a doctor, buddy.
Okay.
Some pills, and they're going to help
you.
Well,
look, it can be brain tumor. You know, all kinds of wild stuff can cause these symptoms.
A brain tumor could make you think you're getting calls from Michelle Pfeiffer?
I wouldn't say that specifically, but...
Is that a Pfeiffer tumor?
Lots of organic problems can cause these kinds of delusions.
All right. So get yourself some help, Ron. And by the way, I really respect Ron for starting off nutty, having us honestly say, listen, we never had that conversation, and him hearing us and saying, well, there must be something up with me.
And that's why I went down the organic path.
And right now he's pacing his living room and he's saying, liars, they're liars.
He may go to that point. But a real, you know, most people with psychoses don't have insight.
Right.
They can't see that they're psychotic. They can't tell.
Right. Rebecca?
Yes?
You're 20?
Actually, I lied. I'm 25.
All right.
How do you know how old everybody is when they call?
It's
on the screen.
Evidently, I don't, because she's 25.
I thought you were a psychic for a minute.
Yeah, 5 years off psychic. Rebecca?
You're 20, Rebecca. You're 120 pounds. You're
Virgo.
No, I'm a Pisces, actually.
And what's up?
What's up? Okay. I recently became an exotic dancer, a stripper, and it's really hard for me to meet guys to date because everybody I meet at the club just thinks I'm a whore and they just want to sleep with me.
Mm-hmm.
And if I meet somebody outside of the club, they're usually like, it's really hard for them to understand what I do, why I do it.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is going to warrant a little more conversation.
Yeah, for sure.
Topless or bottomless?
Just topless. Mm-hmm.
All right. Hold on a second because we're going to take a break and get back to you, right?
Okay.
Just hang on. You're good looking though, right?
Oh, of course I am.
Can't you tell?
Yeah. And she sounds sort of clear-headed, too.
But
by the way, this is something that's exclusive to only women and certainly always strippers, which is you cannot even jest about their sign without them correcting you. Like if you go, oh, let's see, you're 120 pounds, your favorite color is purple, and you're a Gemini. Virgo.
Yeah.
A guy would never do that. A guy could just sit there.
Yeah.
A guy could take it.
Yeah.
A guy could understand that you were doing your Carmack thing and let you run with it. Only a stripper would really, and chick, would have to correct you.
And also it would be not 120 pounds, 119 and a half.
Right. We're going to take a little break. Kevin Nealon is here, the world's funniest man. Kevin Nealon is here, but worst improvisational actor.
Exactly.
Kevin Nealon is here. We're going to speak to Rebecca, the 25-year-old stripper, after this. Hey, everybody. Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew.
And, Adam, the reason the door to our lovely studio is open here is the air conditioning has at lovely Westwood One here is frozen. So they're actually having to put the heat on to de-ice the air conditioning.
Mm. I always find it ironic when the air conditioning freezes up.
Yeah. I just walked in there, Drew. It's not nearly as bad as it is in here, so...
No, it was. When we closed the door, it's awful.
I walked in here right after you walked in and was like...
Man. All right. Anderson, please.
You see the dirty look I gave?
Yeah.
I thought somebody could have fought. That's why the door was open. I didn't know.
All right. Please, Anderson. What are we talking about here?
The stripper, Rebecca.
Ah, that's right. Kevin Nealon here tonight. Conspiracy Zone
Speaking
is the name of his newest show. It's been out for a good 6 months, has it not? Yeah, about 6 months, right?
4 months, yeah.
The new TNN, 9 o'clock Sunday nights, and a rerun on Friday night, 7:30. We left off, we're speaking to Rebecca, 25. Can't remember what her sign is. What's the sign again, Rebecca?
Pisces,
I knew it. I knew it.
Yeah, the fish.
Yeah, yeah. You smell like a fish, right?
Try not to.
What's the Pisces? What kind of baggage does that come with?
Oh, God. I'm supposed to be romantic and somewhat psychotic and,
Check and check.
That's the sign of the stripper, though, isn't it?
Right. How long have you been dancing, Rebecca?
A few months, about 5 months.
And the first time you did it, what was it like?
It was never a big deal. I've always been used to, like, being on stage and being in the theater and everything, so it wasn't really hard for me.
Do you have fake breasts?
No.
Mm-hmm. Kevin could barely ask that question. You know, so he kind of swallowed that one.
He's such a gentleman. Well, he doesn't improvise.
Let me rephrase it. Do you have fake breasts, ma'am?
Miss ma'am.
Rebecca?
Yes.
So you're saying that your trouble is that guys look at you as like a prostitute or something up there?
Yeah, practically. That's how it seems.
Well, what do they do to you? They proposition you?
Well, no, wait a minute. Let's break this down. First of all, you have to realize how guys think, right? And so there you are with your clothes off, using sex and arousal as a way of entertaining them, connecting with them, enticing them.
Getting money from them.
Getting money from them. And in their mind, that's, you know, you're there for them.
Well, and you've knocked over the first domino, essentially, when you take your clothes off and dance in front of the guy. I'm not saying it makes it okay for them to grab a boob or even proposition you, but you got to expect a certain amount of that. Do you know what I'm saying, Rebecca?
Well, yeah. All right. Totally understand
All right.
that.
But then when she says when she's off stage, though, somewhere else, what happens?
I get really insecure, and it's really hard for me to, like, meet people because I just feel like they're going to look at me and think, well, she's a whore. She's a stripper, so.
How do they know you're a stripper?
Well, eventually they'd have to find out.
She wears the pasties on the outside of her sweater.
Have you had that happen in a relationship yet?
I've tried not to meet anybody outside the club, really.
All right, so you need to be in that position where you have power. You use your body as a way of empowering yourself in that relationship with men. Otherwise, you feel vulnerable.
Yes.
All right, that suggests you were abused or abandoned as a child by maybe your dad or somebody like that.
No.
Also, though, when you're having sex with somebody and they call you a whore, they don't necessarily mean it.
No.
That's just part of the process.
Let me put it in a sentence. You filthy whore, don't stop. You see what I'm saying?
Wait a minute. How could you not? What do you mean you weren't abandoned? Your family's perfectly intact. Your dad was available to you your whole life. Loving father.
Pretty much, yeah. I was raised in a good home. I was raised in the church and everything. And I just do what I do because I do enjoy it and I make good money.
Now, well, the money is great.
Then why is it so vulnerable to be in a relationship with a male?
I don't know.
Well, you need to look into that because you're using sex as a way of you have some point in your life felt terribly helpless. And this is a way of avoiding that helplessness by using your body as an instrument and sex as a way of staying empowered. And then you're shocked when men want to continue down that sexual path with you.
All right, Drew, calm down.
Here's my solution to this.
Talk her out of it.
Why not keep being the exotic dancer, Rebecca, but also get another job, like, say, as a cashier or a bagger? And so when somebody asks you what you do, you just tell them, well, I'm a bagger.
Right.
Or cashier.
Right.
And you can just work 5 hours a week if you want doing that.
Yeah, what do you make a night doing the stripping, average?
Usually about $200 a night.
It's not too bad for Arkansas dollars, right? Apartment over there is like $80 a month, right?
Does that include lap dances?
Yeah.
Okay. You go in the private rooms with the guys?
No.
No. They just give the lap dance.
Yeah.
Okay.
How dare they think that sex is something that she would do?
Yeah.
But be that as it may, where did you feel helpless? How did that happen?
No, leave her alone.
Come on. How did you get rendered to feel that a relationship, an intimate relationship with a male would let you feel, would cause you to be helpless and vulnerable?
I really don't know.
All right. Okay. You got to look into that.
There you go. You think you're going to get an answer from a Pisces? I can't remember how old she is when she tells the
story. Do you think that she was helped right now? You think she got
no, but other strippers might have been.
Oh, okay.
It's true. Randy?
Yes.
You're 20?
Yes, I am.
We got to go.
Are you on a speakerphone?
No, I'm on my cell phone.
You are?
Yes.
Okay, what is your question?
Okay, basically the reason why I call is because I was listening to you guys for a couple of years, ever since you've been doing a show on MTV and stuff, and I really admire your work, you know. It's like most young kids around my age or younger or even a little older don't have much people that they can talk to, and it's the fact that, you know, they feel comfortable around you guys. And I'm just wondering, it's like, how did the two of you come to meet? Because you're total opposites, but
you
make a good team when it comes to working. I really appreciate your work, and I'm serious, you too.
Hold on a second, Randy. I appreciate the compliments.
And I suspect Adam will bring you back to gush some more after the break.
No, I won't, but I will tell Randy and everyone else how we met.
All right, we'll get back.
Kevin Nealon with us tonight. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Everybody, Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew. Tonight, we have Kevin Nealon. Kevin is much funnier than you know, or than he knows, or possibly his parents even know. He is on the Conspiracy Zone. It is a show he hosts. I did the show. I had a good time on the show.
What was your topic again?
It was Big Brother.
Big Brother, right.
And cameras being placed around the city and folks monitoring.
People are very paranoid about that.
Mm-hmm. My feeling is if you're not doing anything...
What are you worried about?
Yeah. And people always have that, you know, Big Brother. But first off, let me explain Big Brother. Big Brother knows how much you make each year, and they know your driving record, and they know your address. They already know everything. What are you holding from them?
What is the visual ad?
So there's a black and white camera that's on the corner of a Hoover in Normandy, and you walk past it. What more information does that give Big Brother? They already have your tax returns.
Yeah, but if you're hiding something, like if you go through an intersection and it takes a picture of you going through the red light and you're with someone you shouldn't be with,
right,
and it comes to your house, then you're in trouble. And that's when you're doing something you shouldn't be doing.
If you have nothing to hide.
Yeah.
Thus.
I was going through an intersection last night. The first time this happened, it was a flash. And it scared me. I realized what it was. But I think it was the car behind me they were getting. Because I went through the orange light, and he was behind me.
But you just caught the tail end of the flash.
Well, I hope we don't have to split the ticket.
Yeah, well,
you know what I'm saying?
You're going to find out in a week or so in the mail whether it was you or not.
Were you in Culver City?
No, I was on La Brea and Fountain.
So my understanding is some of these are phony. They're just there to make you think you can't go through.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Some of them are just a strobe light. You get out and you dance. You know.
Yeah. See that? Yeah. They're manned by Denny Terrio from Dance Fever. But here's the thing about Big Brother, and it's the same with all technology. All technology has a good side and has a potential use for evil. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
People argue vehemently against a lot of stuff historically that have come over the years that they did not want that has a potential for evil. But you know what? It has a much greater potential for good.
Yeah.
I mean, when they find these, they track down these guys that are, you know, putting pipe bombs in mailboxes because they track a bunch of cell phone calls to them. And I mean, that's Big Brother tracking you down, but that's okay.
On the other hand, there are a lot of things that I didn't really understand why people would be paranoid about or give a goddamn about until 9/11. And then all of a sudden I thought, oh, I understand. Yeah. I get, things can change when your perspective is different.
And people are okay with it now.
Yeah, with a lot of things. A lot of things are different. I couldn't understand how, like, Civil War generals would stand up on their horse in the middle of gunfire. What the hell were they thinking? Then, like, God, it's their job. It was time to stand up and do that. They needed to do that at that time in history.
Before 9/11, you're saying.
Yeah,
because the war had been over for like 30 years.
No, 130 years.
You said 9/11, 1861.
I don't know if anyone has done it yet, but has anyone gone back and looked at all the other 9/11s and seeing if anything's happened on that date?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I might do that later tonight.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Magna Carta might have been signed on that date. Norman Conquest.
I would be curious, historically, if any other catastrophes or major events have gone on.
Actually, what I think is interesting is a really big historical, I realized just today, in fact, big historical sort of historical events don't have a month and a day.
Right.
They just have a year. It's 1066.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I'm not saying go back, B.C. kind of thing, but the last couple hundred years, American history sort of thing, I'd be curious.
You have April 1st.
Of course, Pisces, right?
Randy?
Yeah.
Randy was gushing.
Oh, that's right. No, I forgot.
How did you guys meet?
You want to know how we met?
Yeah, man, because I'm pretty sure everybody would want to know. You know,
okay.
Knows that I got help from you guys.
All right, thank you.
And then I'll tell you how I met these guys.
True. How did we meet?
I met Kevin at Politically Incorrect last week. I think that's how we ended up here.
How did you and I meet?
We met because you were doing... Why are you asking me to tell the story? You know, I'm a crappy storyteller.
I think this was the same question the last time I was on.
About really?
Three or four years ago.
It may have just seemed like I was telling it for 3 years. That's the thing.
Let me see if I can remember. You were working as a masseuse at the time.
Yes.
And Adam, you had come in
right
for a massage.
I had a lot of tension. And you know what? I was storing it in my neck.
Yeah.
And he asked for a happy release. I didn't know what he was talking about.
That's right. But you found out.
Anyway, I was doing this show for many, many years, and the little fledgling radio station became this big radio station, and Adam ended up doing a character on the morning show that I had heard, and we met through, actually, Ann Wilkins, our producer here. What was the character?
Mr. Burcham, the woodshop teacher.
Vietnam vet woodshop teacher.
Yeah, was popular, and Drew used to listen that character and enjoyed it.
And when they started to do a TV show, the guy I was doing with at the time, Ricky Rackman, didn't sort of pass, and I kind of thought Adam might be able to handle it.
Yeah, so Drew found me.
Yeah, I found him.
And I'll tell you how I met
these guys.
He's
given me no credit for it, and I've regretted it ever since. There you go.
Right.
I met these guys. I wasn't that familiar with the show. I knew one of them was a doctor, and I wasn't sure which one. I thought it was Adam. I thought it was Dr. Adam and Drew. And I came in, and I started just laying all my problems on Adam, his medical things. And I realized then he wasn't the doctor. It was Dr. Drew.
And I, having heard all that, realized we had somebody really problematic.
Yeah, someone deeply troubled.
Yeah.
Sean?
Hey.
You're 27?
Yeah.
What's up?
Hey, Kevin. I was wondering, like, do you ever get people, like, when you get, like, you get some, like...
Oh, I know what you're going to ask me. Yeah, you get them once in a while, but not that often.
It's tough, though, isn't it, when they do that?
Yeah, because...
How do you handle it?
Well, it doesn't happen that often. Once in a while, I'll get people that'll, you know...
Well, seriously, we got to be specific in this show. How often does it happen, do you think?
I'd say maybe once a month.
Wow, it's got to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't even happen that often where I can say once a month. Yeah,
really?
Maybe once every couple of months.
How about you, Adam? Does it happen once in a while, too?
Happens once every about 5 weeks. So, probably about the same as Kevin.
Right.
Same with you, Drew?
No, it's never happened to me.
Sean?
Yeah.
What about you? How do you handle it when it happens to you?
I'm wondering, like, you got a show coming up, and it might be between you and somebody else, and somebody's talking smack. Oh, I don't think Kevin should do the show. I think somebody else should do it. Blah, blah, blah.
I had that conversation with my agent earlier today. He wanted Neilan to do something. I said, blah, blah, blah. It should be someone else. Yeah. So
how do you say, I think I should do it over somebody else?
I'm not really sure what your question is. You mean like if my name comes up to do a show and somebody else thinks somebody else should do it? I'm a little lost.
Restate the question, Sean, please.
In a sentence.
All right. So you're going to do a Friday night, and like one of your peers is like, oh, I think I should do it instead of Kevin. I'm a little bit funnier than Kevin.
Well, that happens all the time.
Those people are working, though.
Yeah.
They have gigs.
Well, you know, everybody in Hollywood pretty much says that when somebody gets a job. They say, well, I think I should be doing that job.
Right.
I'm funnier, right?
Sean is 27, and my kids express themselves in exactly this manner.
Sean, what...
They're nine.
What type of construction do you do? Drywall? You do framing? Roofing?
Roofing.
I do picture framing.
Picture framing?
Yeah.
You're back there working that chop saw all day?
No, I chopped my finger off, though, the other day.
Oh, you did?
Everything okay?
It's not in the frame, is it?
What's that?
It's not, like, behind the matting in somebody's picture, is it?
No.
Which finger did you chop off?
I chopped off my middle finger.
On which hand?
My left hand.
How'd you do that?
I was a little careless. I had my finger up on the straight cutter and...
Yeah.
You know, Sean, around the razor blade. You should hire Sean for crank anchors.
What kind of chop saw? What kind of miter saw do you guys
can
use?
I just ask, were they able to reattach it?
Yeah, they did.
That's a medical term, by the way, reattach.
They did, but the picture's still attached to the finger, so it presents a problem, especially on any signal.
There's a little bit of blood on the picture, but...
Okay. Sean, did you ever suffered any brain injuries, any head trauma?
I had a testicular surgery. I had a torsion of the testicle.
Yeah, that's not where the brains are located so much.
Any ever hit your head?
No.
How far did you go in school?
I graduated from high school.
Okay. That school should be shut down. It should be a carpet bomb, that school.
All right. Did you ever lose a finger in shop class?
No.
All right, buddy. You don't have kids, do you?
No, I sure don't.
Good job. Way to go,
buddy.
Sean.
Don't get anyone pregnant. And I'm glad you asked that question about Kevin and how he feels about other people and how they feel about him.
Yeah, I was just wondering if he ever gets like somebody is trying to like stiff him over for the job.
Right. Well, it's a cutthroat business.
In television?
Comedy.
Well, I think Tom Cruise did that to me in Mission Impossible. I was up for that.
You're up for two or first?
All
one
of them.
Or two?
All of them.
Oh, both.
Yeah.
Wow,
and also, Spider-Man. I was up for that. And someone stiffed me on that one.
Toby gave me the shit on that one.
Yeah. So, you know, you gotta go with the flow, man. You gotta be resilient in this business.
Well, the important thing is you landed on your feet. You didn't do Spider-Man, but you are in the new TNN.
Yeah.
And I think the joke's on Toby now.
I think so. I think he sees what's happened.
Alex?
Yep. Hello?
Alexis?
Yep.
Yeah. That's Sean. Hold on a second. Tara. Sean there, line four. What did he say to you? How did he phrase his question when he was talking to you?
I had to rephrase it with him. Are you pushing the button?
Yes, we hear you.
I had to rephrase it with him like five times.
Okay. But remember,
we should have a rule. If you rephrase it once, pow.
Remember about 45 minutes ago when I walked in there and I said, we need guys who can speak English. Like, I can't have guys who can't form a sentence. Remember that? And you said, yeah, okay.
But wasn't that the best call of the night so far?
Probably was.
I like Sean. Don't get me wrong.
Okay. Oh, no. He's a wonderful, wonderful individual. He's a dynamite individual. Alexis?
Yeah?
Lit up the lines.
You're 22. What's up?
I want to know if a woman's vagina permanently stretches after childbirth.
Yes, many times, and not that bad. I mean, it's designed to sort of spring back, right?
Right.
And sometimes, particularly after the first delivery, there can be tearing.
It springs back because my mother's fell forward. That was
what time of the year was it?
It was around the fall.
That's when you spring forward.
No,
she sprung forward.
You fall back.
Oh, you fell back.
Hers fell forward. It didn't.
Yeah. And the good thing about that is you could sleep an hour later in the morning.
Her vagina cat, but she was up and around. Yeah, are you pregnant, Alexis?
No, I'm not pregnant. It's sort of an ongoing debate I have with my boyfriend.
Listen, obviously it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Right? Not a big deal. And sometimes if there's a tear or you have an episiotomy, the doctor can even sew it up even a little tighter if you want.
Okay.
And it's not a big deal.
Really? Will they actually put another stitch in there?
That's kind of a joke. It's not only not in a joke. I remember when I was delivering babies when I was a third-year medical student, women would ask for that. I was shocked.
Wow.
Like, what?
You know, a friend of mine.
Yeah, would you tighten up for my husband?
A friend of mine had a baby, and, no, I can't say that.
No, say it.
No.
It's Loveline.
No.
Kid was ogling?
No. Does anything else in the woman's body change?
Lots of things do. As they age?
No, after from having the baby.
Her ass,
I mean, aside from the breasts and the stomach.
The hips widen, the breasts, you know, yeah, can deflate. There's something called atrophic.
They grow a mustache sometimes.
Uh-huh.
What happens?
The breast can become sort of flattened out like a fried egg looking.
Yeah. Anything else?
Nothing good, if that's what you're asking. It's all the same.
Hemorrhoids.
Really?
Oh, commonly. Rectal tears. Those are awful.
And that's it with the rectal area?
Let's keep going. What can I think of?
Get warm.
What else have you said?
Well, sometimes, and Drew's told me about this, and this sounds, my vagina cries for these women, where the vagina rips down to the anus to make one big opening.
Yeah, that's a rectal tear. It tears all the way down to the rectum. When the baby's head just tears everything apart.
Yeah,
and comes
that's
out.
Not it, though.
No, the uterus can fall out. That can happen as you get older.
Stick with the anus, Drew. I think that's where you're warm.
Rectal prolapse? The
warm, hot, on
rectum,
fire.
Bleeding,
volcano.
Hemorrhoid.
Surface of the sun. Surface sun.
Hemorrhoid.
Magma.
But they turn inside out sometimes?
That's a prolapse. It falls out.
What happens?
Rectum can fall out.
Fall out.
It kind of turns inside out. You know,
push the rectum outside of the sphincter?
Older people that happen. You know those little things that they give kids that have they're sort of like tubes that have a fluid. I'm not describing this very well.
Is it like that doll you push and the eyes pop out?
Kind of like that, yeah.
So that happened near Frenny or something?
No.
Yeah,
he wants to talk about thyroid or something, I guess.
It was more the tear.
The tear, rectal tear.
Yeah,
but it teared from her vagina up to her mouth.
Really?
Instead of going the other way.
She turned into one big change purse?
Yeah.
So one big toiletry bag?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Now he keeps his extra razor and shave cream in her now. Puts her in the overhead. Sean?
Yeah.
You're 24?
Yeah.
You have a question or comment for Kevin?
Actually,
first of all, it seems like everybody that calls this thing is named Sean.
Yeah.
Yeah, tonight.
Yeah, everyone.
How about that?
It's always that way, though.
Is that a popular name for everybody that's 28 or 30?
Yeah.
All right, thanks for your question, Sean.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead, Sean.
Well, first of all, I'm a big fan, guys. I just want to say, sure. Dr. Drew and Adam, you guys rock.
Thank you.
Thanks for the entertainment.
Thank you.
back in January, I was on a plane, same plane as Kevin. And Kevin, by the way, I'm a big fan of yours, too.
Oh, thanks.
I told you so. I met you in the airport in Newark. I don't remember this back in January.
Yeah, you got off the plane.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a panic attack, and I wanted to call to apologize for the delay.
Oh, that was a long delay, too. They had to get your bags off.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But I think everybody totally understood it. And I've had panic attacks on planes before, but more anxiety attacks. So I didn't think anything of it. I just felt bad for you.
Yeah, that's what I have. I have an anxiety disorder. And.
But you seem pretty good getting on the plane.
Yeah, I was, you know what, flying out was...
I know what happened. I think we had to sit there for a while, and that's when it happens.
Yeah, because it was packed. It was like being on the frickin' Titanic. Because I had my daughter with me, and she...
Yeah, right. Your wife was there, too.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, what you got to try and do is get more mileage so you can upgrade to first class. You don't feel as claustrophobic there.
Yeah, I've done that. My dad had a lot of frequent flyer miles, and he used to let me sit in first class, but now I'm poor.
Or you get, you know what you do? When I fly coach, sometimes I'll get the emergency exit row where there's no seats in front of you.
Mm. Well, they wouldn't let me sit there because I was real nervous.
Where you live in Pasadena? That's where I live.
What's that?
Where you live in Pasadena? That's where I live.
South Pasadena.
That's my office is.
Wow.
Man. By the way, did you get on a plane after that?
No.
How did you get back?
Well, it's kind of weird. That's a good question. I was going to take a train. I was so freaked out. I was going to take a train. I got on the train, and it was smaller than a plane.
Ooh.
And it was,
Well, let me get the story straight.
Sure.
You met Kevin in the airport.
Yeah, I met Kevin in the bathroom, actually.
Really?
I don't want to hear anymore.
I wanted to...
And then he left because it was claustrophobic.
No.
Right.
I saw Kevin in the bathroom.
Kevin kept offering him a towel.
I'm a huge fan, yeah.
All right, you met him at the airport, then you got on the plane. Kevin sat in first class.
He was coming on. He said hi.
Yeah, right.
He's a fan.
Sat in the back.
Mike Piazza's on the plane, too.
He sat there.
I was like, wow, these guys are going to be real pissed.
He sat there for a while, and then you just got up, walked to the front, and said, I got to get off the plane.
Yeah, I got all sweaty and cold, you know, when you have...
Right.
Anxiety. I totally understood that.
The gate wasn't... I mean, the
jetway
was not attached to it.
Yeah, they shut the door, And when they shut the door, that was like the last straw for me. And I said, forget this. And I got up and I told them I couldn't stay. And they said, you got to decide now. Are you on or off? And I said, I'm off.
And so what about, and your wife and kid went with you?
Yeah, she got off, but she had to get back for work. So I said, go ahead. And
That's really hard, too. I think your wife was, she was probably very frustrated with it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Drew, how about giving the guy Xanax or something to travel with?
Yeah,
I have Klonopin.
Well, Klonopin probably wouldn't work very well for this kind of thing.
Yeah, I
for a couple reasons.
I've been taking it for anxiety.
You have an anxiety disorder, and you're taking it for the general.
You know what I do?
What?
This is true. I'm serious.
Okay.
I went to get a root canal a while back, and I got some Ativan prescribed. And
Adam,
yeah,
you listening?
That's me.
And yeah. I have maybe 10 tablets in a bottle that I keep with me at all times, especially on an airplane, because sometimes I get those anxiety attacks. But just knowing that I have it in there calms me, and I've never had to take one.
You sort of learn right. That the anxiety doesn't help the situation.
But
it diminishes.
But you invite it.
Oh, yeah.
You invite it in, you know.
I'm the same way, just knowing it's in my belly, though. That's the only twist.
With a bloody.
It's underneath like six Bloody
yeah,
Marys.
Right. Yeah.
Listen, people, you got to start boozing it up at the airport. You just got to start boozing it up. That's what I do.
But
I go in and have a double. I get a little loopy. I slide into first class. I get loopier, and I don't remember the whole goddamn trip.
Right, right. But I totally sympathize with him because, you know, I've felt that way before, too, and I didn't mind waiting at all.
Now, what's the difference? Kevin made the distinction between a panic attack and an anxiety attack.
Same thing.
Same thing. Okay.
Anxiety attack is more like the appetizer. For the panic attack.
Panic's full-blown.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're going to either decide if you're going to have an entree with that or not.
And I didn't know you had that. I never know. Never knew that was...
I haven't had it lately, but...
Right.
Oh, panic attacks are awful.
Drew's had them.
Oh.
Drew needed me, though. Drew had a panic attack when we did Loveline once. I just yelled at him.
TV. I had to take a break. I had to get off this plane, basically. And
yeah. I've had excuses all made up. Like, if I was on stage somewhere and I had to get off...
Right.
What I would say was... Sorry, I know I messed up the show, but I got this flu, and I don't know, I'm dizzy, and, you know, you know.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know what a nut job you are. Yeah. I'm good like that.
Jeez.
Well, Kevin, you'll appreciate, since you have panic, how...
I don't anymore, but I did for a while.
I have had it periodically, and Adam was very good with this. I went in my dressing room, and Adam pounded on the door, burst in, and said, God damn it, if I have to spend one more minute on this set because of you, I'm going to kick your ass. Get out there, God damn it, and get your ass.
Did that help?
No. I felt like crap, but I finished the show.
He went out immediately, did another show, and did a good job.
Right.
All right. So apparently...
Well, what I do is, I found that what helps me is I tell somebody that I may be having an anxiety attack. And as long as I know that somebody else knows,
really?
I feel like
I can relate to that. Yeah.
Aaron?
Yes?
You're saying something else famous happened on 9/11, which was Pete Rose beating Ty Cobb's hitting record?
That is correct.
What year was that?
That was 1985.
August 23rd.
Thank you very much.
I wonder if
Pete
thinks about that.
There's a guy I would not want to spend a great deal of time with. Mike?
Yes, sir.
You're 32?
I am.
You know something else that happened on 9/11?
Yes, I do.
What?
In Melbourne, Australia in 2000, they had the World Economic Summit, you know, after they had the...
Right.
Like the one they had in Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there were just lots of riots and demonstrators and all that. So when I realized the date, I kind of freaked out.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. It's not not bad, but I give it a 3.5 or a 4.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Nothing earth-shattering.
Because every day there's some sort of economic something or business something. You know?
Right. And there's some freaked out tree huggers out there.
Right. Adam, where are you from?
Himself to something.
You know, I asked you earlier,
North Hollywood.
Have an accent.
North Hollywood.
What is that accent, though? It says like a Chicago, you know, 3.5.
It's basically a deviated septum mixed with just a horrible attitude.
There's more
apathy.
Than that, though.
Apathy, deviated septum, poor grammar. There you go.
Yeah. That's the hat trick.
Is it your A's or something? It's.
Yeah, I'll keep talking. I don't know. My folks are from, my dad's from
Philadelphia. Yeah, you were there.
Maybe that's it.
I got a little Philly.
Yeah.
In me, and, you know, why shouldn't you be like your folks? I mean, if you think about it, you watch that show, The Osbournes. The kids speak with an English accent. They were born and raised out in the United States, but they're folks.
Right.
I mean, it makes sense that that's what it would be. You forget about it with sort of dialects and regional things, but if you grow up in a Hispanic family, chances are you're going to have a Spanish accent. Mm-hmm. And if your folks are both from Queens, just because you move out to L.A. doesn't mean you're not going to have that Queens accent. It may not be as heavy.
Did your parents have deviated septums?
My dad's wasn't until I gave him a savage beating on my 18th birthday, and then it collapsed his nasal cavity.
Nice.
And he couldn't.
Then well, hopefully he learned his lesson.
No, he hasn't. No, he still looks at me weird. So he's due for another savage beating. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back. Hey, everybody. It's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew over there. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Kevin Nealon is our guest tonight. Kevin hosts The Conspiracy Zone, which is on the new TNN, and that's Friday nights at 9 o'clock and then 7:30.
Well, it's Sunday actually, it's Sunday nights at 9 o'clock and then Friday at 7:30
all right,
and
all
midnight.
I did was flip those.
That's easy, flipped it around.
That's not bad.
No. I mean, it's the same thing, actually. You know,
yeah.
You turn on, it doesn't matter what time you tune in.
Sure,
you'll find
I have
it.
This down here. Yeah. Sunday nights, 9 o'clock, Friday rerun, 7:30. That's
and 12
right.
o'clock, yeah.
Hey, we got some right. Kevin questions here.
All right. Let's talk to Robert. Robert?
Hello?
16, what's up?
Hey, Adam.
Hey, buddy.
Drew.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey.
Big fan of both of you guys. I actually remember, Drew, you came over to San Marino High School the other year, talked to us.
A couple years ago, yeah.
Yeah, that was a while ago, but I have a good memory. Actually, I'm a big fan of Kevin Nealon, too, actually. I've seen The Conspiracy Zone a few times. Actually, what I really liked is on Saturday Night Live when you used to do Subliminal Man.
Right.
Very funny right. bit.
That was really funny. I actually remember you going through that routine talking about Saddam Hussein getting out in a body bag and...
Right.
Drew, you're not familiar with Subliminal Man, are you?
Of course I'm not.
No, he's not. But that was a good Subliminal Man answer. Oh. Hey, can you give us a taste of that, Kevin? Maybe something from the stand-up act?
Yeah, I really wanted to hear some of that.
Well, you know, that was the first sketch I ever did on Saturday Night Live.
Wow.
And it came near the end of the show, so I was terrified because it was the first time I was going to be on camera. And it's like carrying on two conversations at once.
Yeah, it's impressive because it seems difficult as well as being funny.
Right, right. But, no, basically, you know, I'm sitting here with these guys, and I could tell a lot about people because I'm a people watcher, Peeping Tom. That's what I like to do, you know, I like to watch people. And, you know, looking at Drew, I could tell he's a pretty together guy, cross-dresser, because, you know, just by watching someone, I could tell that, you know, he's doing fine detox, you know. And with Adam, it's the same thing, pervert. You know, it's not just nice being here with these guys.
Yeah, see? You get the idea? Very funny. I always enjoy that. And it's one of these things where it's sort of like watching a show where some wheel is spinning and you're not going to tune out until it stops on something, which is when he does Subliminal Man, even if you didn't like the last one, there's another one that's coming in about 5 seconds.
It's like golf.
You'll keep waiting for the next one, but it's impressive and it's funny and it challenges you a little bit to keep up and sort of think along with it.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of thing that you could probably do, you could do 3 minutes or 5 minutes, not to make it 3 minutes, every week on Saturday Night Live for the next 20 years, and I would just sit there and watch it.
Yeah, yeah. Right. When we were first coming up with it, we were trying to figure out, should we flash the word on the screen too? should we say the word to try to get somebody to do something, or just to sneak it in there?
Didn't you occasionally have some of the guests like do subliminal stuff too?
Maybe once or twice.
Don't be kind. Never happened. Right. Not gonna.
Tyson. I really don't remember a lot of, you know.
Yeah.
Tyson?
Yes.
You're 28?
Yes, sir.
What's up?
I just wanted to give a shout out to Kevin, ask him what it felt like to get the Weekend Update spot. Because to me, that was a really smart choice. I've been watching faithfully since around 86, and my friends and I are going, well, Dennis is leaving. What's happening? And then Kevin got the spot, and we were like, yeah, that's great. He doesn't have, he's funny, and they don't give him enough to do. Put him right there. That's
he can't
beautiful.
Do the improv stuff, so.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we were just talking about that earlier, where, you know, it's one of those slots that, you know, people get used to watching somebody doing it for a while, and then when someone else comes along, people generally have to kind of
adjust.
Readjust, yeah. And they either like them or they don't, you know. And
yet, I was telling Adam last night, Kevin did one of my very favorite, I think I mentioned this the last time you were up here, improv skits.
Not improv.
Well, it was skits. Saturday Night Live. Those are all sort of considered skits.
Well, they call them sketches.
They're not improv. All right, I don't know the difference.
Skits, that's demeaning.
Right. What the hell's the difference?
Well, it's like when you tell a woman, when Anne freaks out when I call it rouge.
Okay. It's like a purse or a pocketbook.
And that blush. And that blush.
I see.
That's what calling a skit is to a sketch.
I think it was Harvey Keitel.
That's what my dad calls it. When you're little skits.
When Harvey Keitel was on the John and you were the attendant in the bathroom.
Bathroom attendant, yeah.
So funny.
Yeah.
I like doing that one. I wrote that one.
You wrote that one?
Yeah.
See, that was the funniest skit I ever saw on Saturday Night Live.
And in the dress rehearsal, he could not keep a straight face. And in the live show, he's got his face covered up with paper most of the time.
Yeah, he was busting up. Yeah.
But what a lot of people don't know is he actually took a dump during that sketch.
Interesting.
He's a method actor, you know.
Yeah, a lot of guys kind of
pull. Yeah, he really committed to it.
June?
Hey, what's up?
You're 19. What's up?
Yeah, I called you guys a couple weeks ago. I was the one asking the question about the threesome and whatnot. And I talked to my girlfriend about it. You know, I listened. I took you guys' advice. I talked to her about it. And, you know, and we decided to say, hell with that. You know, we're not going to do that. We're not going to screw up the relationship.
I know what a threesome is, but what's a whatnot?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
is that something that's added on to the threesome and a whatnot?
Yeah, it's, no, I don't know.
Good comeback.
You got him there. Well, so you didn't do it, but that's not why you're calling.
Yeah, actually, I was calling because I was curious as if I get my penis pierced. I was wondering if there's any anything that'll happen like bad, you know, like sexually later on down the road.
What kind of piercing you gonna get?
Prince Albert.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of all kinds of things happening, including erectile dysfunction, urethral tears, urethral stenosis, infections. Things can happen.
And rectum tears?
Not from the, well, no.
Just your friends.
Yeah.
Hey, June, it's a painful process. We've seen it done. They don't use any anesthetic, and it's very painful.
Unless you do it yourself. Then it's not that bad.
Right.
It's a spear going through your penis.
Yeah, June, don't bother with it. You really, it's going to be one of the things. Here's the deal.
What is it you need, June? You got to have a threesome. You got to have a piercing. What is going on? And I remember him arguing that everything was fine. He just was curious. No, come on.
What's up?
Well, no, I mean I don't know. I bet you guys are probably thinking I'm pretty crazy or something like that. But no, you know, it's just.
No, I was going stupid. First thought crazy.
Why don't you start with piercing something else instead of going right to the penis?
Oh, I got my ears pierced.
How did that feel?
It felt good.
Any erectile dysfunction from that? It felt good?
A little bit of erectile dysfunction from it. No, there's...
It felt good?
Oh, I didn't even feel it, actually.
Listen. Let me just give a speech for all you youngins listening to the show. Here's what you're supposed to do with your teens and your early to mid-20s. You're supposed to do as little permanent damage to yourself and society as possible. No crazy tats, no wild piercings, no hoops through the penis, don't knock anybody up, and don't get drunk and kill someone on your moped. This is the whole idea is if you can make it from 15 to 25 with all your fingers, without a rap sheet, without a few illegitimate kids, or having offed your old man, in a fit of rage after a couple of tall boys, you've done well for yourself. Do you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And there will come a point in your life, and it'll probably be somewhere in your later 20s, when you probably regret some of the crazy tats and some of the crazy piercings and some of the crazy broads. The idea is to be able to look down the road just a little bit, far enough to see that penis hoop and what it really means to you.
What about the ear, like they have earrings that are clamp-ons.
Mm-hmm. My grandmother wears
a clamp-on for the penis instead of going with a piercing.
A merkin and a clamp-on, you'd be all set.
Yeah,
that's right.
Quite the attire.
Yeah, you get a third ball put in your sack. You get
Brown
a clamp-on.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, my grandmother always had those clamp-on earrings. Mm. Is that a grandma move?
Yeah. Do you think when young teenagers have a lot of piercings and their hair dyed green and tattoos and stuff, do you think they really put up a stink when they have to get braces?
Yeah,
what's the man doing that to them?
Yeah.
Just them having to comply.
That's right. Interesting.
Opposition.
Yeah, most of them, most rebelling against their folks. Brent?
Hi.
Brent, you're 29.
Yeah, I love your guys' show.
Thank you.
I had a question for Kevin. First I wanted to say that my favorite skit of his was that Mr. No Depth Perception. That was hilarious.
Yeah. Well, how did that one go? Because that sounds familiar.
You asking me?
No, I'm asking Drew. Drew?
Can't remember.
Okay. Now, Kevin.
That is Mr. No Depth Perception. I did that one time, and I think I did it once. I did it twice. It was a rerun. And it was a guy who just couldn't tell if things were up close or far away. And so we'd be talking at the dinner table, and I'd be maybe talking about Drew saying something that, you know, that I didn't think he'd be able to hear because he was sitting way far away, but really he was up close.
Oh.
You know.
And knock over things and do that kind of
stuff? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'd go to pour somebody some water, and I'd pour it on the table instead of in their glass, you know.
I'm trying to remember if I saw that one or not. Hey, Brent?
Yeah?
Anyway, that was one of your favorites?
Yeah.
Any, you have a question for Kevin?
Yeah, I just wanted to know, during his years on Saturday Night Live, who his favorite guest host was and why?
People ask me that a lot. There were so many. I was on for 9 seasons, so there was a lot of great guest hosts. You know, I can't name them all, but, you know, Steve Martin, Tom Hanks.
Was Alec Baldwin hosting back
great.
Then?
Yeah.
He's always, you know, he was on this show, because sometimes we get big names on this show.
That's right. That's
and
pretty good.
That was,
how was his improv?
Strong. Surprisingly strong.
Do you own a ranch in Ojai?
That was him, yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah,
great.
Intimidating.
Do you own a ranch
strong.
In Ojai?
You're now Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
I told him, I thought, I was amazed at how good he was on that show. And you know who else was really good on it, surprisingly enough? John Travolta was funny on the show.
Yeah, he was. He loves to pretend. You know, he loves to do goofy characters and...
Yeah, he would do like Barbara Streisand and stuff and drag and everything.
He did Marlon Brando.
Yeah, it was really good on that. But I was talking a few weeks back about a concept, and you know, you're tight with Lorne Michaels still, I'm sure.
I don't talk to him that much, but
he'd listen to you if he had an idea, right?
Yeah.
Here's my idea. The worst of Saturday Night Live. I mean, we've had an ass full of these tributes to Belushi and the best of, best of, best of.
Right.
I'm talking about the sketches that didn't work. And I'm not talking about because a boom mic fell down into it.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the turds that just stunk up the place and laid there. And the bands that sucked and that you've never heard of.
Right.
I can't even think of a good band, but like a host. That, you know, there's been, I mean, if you looked over the list of hosts that they had just during the time that Kevin was there, you'd probably be shocked that you probably never heard of a handful of the people that did it.
The guy, the guy in the coconuts?
Yeah, King Crimson.
King Crimson and the coconuts.
Yeah, but, well, even them not as bad as some of these. I'm it's not Boys to Men, but I'm trying to Color Me Bad, for instance.
Yeah.
Could be. Now, this could be a 1 or even 2 hour special, all the bands you've never heard of that you can't you couldn't believe.
Yeah.
Milli Vanilli. I don't know if Milli Vanilli did
not
the show.
I was there, no.
But some of these god-awful bands, god-awful fashions, god-awful sketches, and god-awful hosts that never really worked again.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe Jocko, the guy from Down Under. Hoy!
Yeah,
the
right.
Big rugby
right.
player.
That would be a very interesting show, I think, you know.
People would watch, wouldn't they?
They would
just
watch.
Just sort of out of morbid curiosity, and you'd see a lot of Kevin Nealon.
Yeah,
a lot
you'd
of
see
Nealon.
Me all over
he'd
the place,
probably
man.
Probably the whole show.
That's right.
Probably to pare it down a little, get Nealon.
Yeah. You know what was interesting? When they had the 25-year anniversary,
mm-hmm.
and we went to the studio, and they had a lot of clips they were showing, and everybody, almost everybody that was ever on the show came.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like... Drew Barrymore sitting over here, David Bowie sitting behind me or next to me, and they showed clips. It was funny watching these people watch themselves from, like, David Bowie watching himself from, you know, 20 years ago, being on the show and
they
doing
must
fame.
Have been,
and
they must have been horrified, most of them.
Oh, no, but David Bowie, I remember he was watching the monitor.
Hold on, you're saying Bowie?
Yeah, David Bowie.
That's Bowie.
Yeah.
Right. Watch the monitor. Don't interrupt the story.
Well, I didn't know if he was talking about David Bowie.
Okay,
David Bowie.
And.
All right, I'm sorry.
And he was just... He was smart. He was just really enjoying seeing himself. It was like watching old home movies for him, you know.
I would love to see some of the worst fashions, some of the designs and things that were hot for just 1 year.
Or they never caught on.
Went away, yeah. never caught on. Some once in a blue moon, I'll be watching Comedy Central, turn on an episode from 1983, and stare at it and say, I've never seen that host. This guy's hosting the show. And I know I've seen every TV show and I've seen most movies, and I can't place this guy. I have no idea who this guy is.
Yeah.
Watching the whole monologue going, who is this guy? Mm. The worst of Saturday Night Live.
And it somebody's turns out to be Bill Cosby.
Genius.
Yes.
Yeah.
But not good at improv.
Yeah. Well, what's your question, Sean?
Well, no, we're taking a break. It's not a goddamn shot. Kevin Nealon, our guest tonight. We'll be right back after this. Crying. Oh. Hey, everybody. It's Loveline. Don't you hate when the show interrupts our spirited conversation?
Always, always.
All right, let's see if we can reel it in just a little bit and muddle through the last 10 minutes of the show, and then it's back to the conversation.
Back to the comedy.
Good times, good times. All right, let's talk to Sean. Sean is... No, Owen is 22.
What's up, man?
What's up there, Owen?
Hey, I got a question for Drew.
All right. Do you guys already not like Owen?
Yes. He's got too much energy.
I already got the read.
I just don't even like him already. All right, Owen, go ahead. We're about 22.
All right, well, I have this little problem where I end up cheating on every single girlfriend I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I get into a monogamous relationship, I go out and cheat on them at least once. Maybe three or four times. Who knows?
And so why do you do that? Why do you do that?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. I honestly don't have an answer. I don't know if it's because I'm afraid of relationships or if it's because
I don't think you're afraid of relationships. What do you feel about these women who are in relationships with you?
I care about them a lot.
Really? Would you treat someone that you care a lot about that way?
That's not the way I look at it though. I look back on it, I look back on it in hindsight that way, but during that time I don't look at it as they don't find out about it.
And how do you look at it during that time?
I don't. It doesn't even register.
Owen's got a little of that strip club DJ voice going. Owen, you ever do that?
Do I ever do that? Not a whole lot.
The governor's stage is Brandy showing your free stage. Jade, stage five. We got a business van lunch coming up, all the hot wings you enjoy, and $19 bottles of miniature shot of champagne.
Adam, you got that down. You must be going to a lot of strip clubs.
Yeah, it's one continuous loop that goes through every strip club. I hear it in my head when I'm driving.
They always call you gentleman, too. All right, gentlemen.
Yeah, gentlemen, they'll show you appreciate it. She's working hard for you once you work hard for her. Businessman selection. I always like the air traffic controller part, though, where he's selling the chick who's on stage three, but he's giving a heads up to Brandy who needs to get on stage. Look at the show you appreciate. That's Candy on stage one. Brandy, stage two. He's like traffic cop, pimp, part traffic cop. He's moving people around. There's four or five stages. Got to keep them rolling. All right. ATM's only $10. Service charge. Owen, what do you do for a living?
Well, I actually work at a car stereo shop in Portland.
Perfect. you go with a Blaupunk. I'm an Alpine or something. But I'm a techniques man. I got one of these in my room. Detachable face frames, navigation device, CD.
Not to change the subject, but Dr. Drew, what does it mean if my fingertips are going numb on my left hand?
Which fingertips?
Pinky.
Probably carpal tunnel.
Carpal tunnel.
Does it give you sort of electricity?
Okay, leave him alone. Huh? We'll talk to him off the air. Owen?
What's up, man?
Okay, you're 22. This is something that 22-year-old guys do.
Is it just that? Is it something I can't get around because I'm just a horn dog?
Well, no, you got a little sociopath in you.
Oh, yes,
you
do.
That's what I'm wondering.
Owen looks out for Owen.
Right, and you don't really acknowledge other people as having feelings or your behaviors, sort of affecting them because, after all, it doesn't matter. Let's talk about my fingertips for a minute.
Right.
Carpal tunnel, you say?
Right, wrist splints at night. Just go to the pharmacy and get a wrist splint, wear it at night.
Why do you put a wrist splint on at night?
It decreases some of the, I guess, some of the swelling of the nerves through the canal here.
All right, so I'll be wearing a night guard then, and I'll also have a wrist splint on.
Right.
Put aside. And you'll be catheterized.
Eventually.
Oh, no.
You need to be able to have real relationships and acknowledge that other people have feelings, and it's...
What if Owen wore a wrist splint?
It wouldn't help him.
It would not help that problem. Okay. All right, let's move real quick here. Christina?
Hello?
Christina, you're saying that on 9/11/1950, the U.S. invaded Canada.
Really? No.
I mean Korea, sorry.
Canada.
I took Canada and Korea and made it into one place.
9/11/1950, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Are you Korean?
No.
Okay. I just wonder how you happen to know that specifically.
You know who led that invasion?
MacArthur.
Oh, yeah. Boy. You got the internet all cranked up.
She's not Korean?
No, it's a book that I have.
Wow.
About the Korean and Vietnam War.
Are you lesbian?
No.
Put that book away.
Do your fingertips ever get numb?
No.
No, Christina?
No.
Right, good time.
Just me.
Take care of yourself there, bud.
Oh, wait. I went to ask Dr. Drew.
Mm-hmm. Right.
A question.
Yeah, go.
What are some websites that I can find out about, like, breast reduction?
Oh.
For yourself?
What size are you?
I'm a D.
D?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I doubt...
I'm a little person.
Yeah.
Those are the restaurants I usually eat at. The ones with the D on the window.
On the door.
In California, yeah.
Christina, you just need to have a consultation with a plastic surgeon if that's really important to you.
How big are you?
Oh, I'm just a D, but like...
Now, how big's the rest of you?
I'm really, like, small-framed.
Nice.
I'm short.
And you're petite.
Yeah.
So you look kind of, you're like the space needle. You're thin on the bottom. There's just a big old, big chunk up top, right?
Yeah.
That's what I like.
Is that inconvenient?
Yeah.
For you?
I'll tell you.
You're really athletic.
Between your stature, your build, and your knowledge of the Korean conflict, I think we could really hang out. I mean that. And she came right back with MacArthur. You know what I mean? All right. You're 17. Give it another year or so. Or consult with a plastic surgeon.
Yeah,
just ask him.
That's right.
Oh, that's got to be a great day as a plastic surgeon. She comes walking in, 17-year-old, tight ass, big hands, knows all about the Korean conflict. Talking about the...
Now, what about a plastic surgeon for my fingertips? We'll talk.
All right. We'll be back. Hey, everybody. That's it.
Whew.
That's Wednesday night, right?
This was it.
I don't have to thank anybody, but I want to thank Kevin Nealon for coming in here and tell everyone to watch the Conspiracy Zone, which is on Sunday nights.
That's right.
And that's Friday. 9 o'clock, and then it repeats at 7:30 and 12 midnight.
On Friday.
On Friday nights. And Kevin's a good guy and a funny guy, and the show's good. And
I'm a lot taller.
He's a vegetarian.
He's a vegetarian, and he's rangy. He's really rangy.
I'm free range. I can roam wherever I want to go.
That's right. Until you have a panic attack and have to lock yourself in the basement. So, until next time, this is Adam Kroller for Dr. Drew saying mahalo.
I could tell a lot about people because I'm a people watcher, Peeping Tom. That's what I like to do. You know, I like to watch people. And, looking at Drew, I could tell he's a pretty together guy, cross-dresser, because, you know, just by watching someone, I could tell that, you know, he's doing fine detox, you know. And with Adam, it's the same thing, pervert. You know, it's not just nice being here with these guys.
This has been Loveline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. The producer for Loveline is Ann Wilkins Engel. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.